Hello guys, welcome back to another episode of the Let's Talk Agriculture podcast show. So it's me, your favorite host, Sharon Idahosa. Today I bring you an amazing topic, an amazing topic that I believe is more like a trending issue that should be sorted out. So I'm not going to give you so much details, but as the podcast progresses, you understand why I think this is very, very important. But for that to happen, of course, we have a guest that will tell us what we need to know. So thank you very much, Iyasu, for joining the show today. I really do appreciate your time. I really appreciate you being here for me today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's my pleasure, actually. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. So I believe that it's going to be a shame if I don't do this. I mean, I need to let people know who you are. So please do me the honor of introducing yourself to our guest, to our audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. As you mentioned, my name is Elias Ishak. Currently, I work as a business development manager with Crop IT Nigeria Limited, which is an agri-tech company providing services to supporting smallholder farmers. I'm also an agribusiness specialist as well as agriculture researcher. I have worked with Sasakawa Africa Association as well as Crop Share Solutions with Africa, Harrison's International Limited, where I was manager agro allied and food. I have been quite active in management of the Central Bank of Nigeria and Cobaros program, which has supported over 1.2 million farmers across different commodities. Thank you.
Well, that's pretty awesome. Well, I think you mentioned you're having your own company where you've been supporting smallholder farmers. For how long have you been doing that?
I founded my company. Sorry, I didn't mention that. Southern Group Limited in 2017 with the sole purpose of supporting smallholder farmers through innovative approach and knowledge transfer aimed at enhancing their livelihood. Smallholder farmers amount to over 70% of our total food production, and so it has become necessary for us to support them in order to enhance their livelihood, in order to enhance their productivity, with providing knowledge sharing with them and building their capacity. And so on. So we have been doing this
since. Oh, that's commendable. So what has been your experience so far? How have you been able to relate with these farmers? I mean, just give us your overall experience. I mean, this is more like 6 years or thereabouts. So I'm sure you have so much to dish out, but just let us know one or two experiences you've gathered from running an organization like this and working with smallholder farmers.
Well, for me, honestly speaking, I will say it has been very fulfilling putting smiles on smallholder farmers, working with them, sharing experiences with them, being in their needs, you know, seeing how they do things and educate them on how to do those things better. Of course, working with smallholder farmers comes with its own challenges. Definitely, there are a lot of challenges in terms of adaptability, in terms of acceptability of knowledge or technology being taken to the farmers. But with consistency, with good strategies, you know, smallholder farmers tend to accept and work with the knowledge and the new technology being taken to them. Smallholder farmers are very receptive, I will say. They always try to make people happy, to share with people with the little they have. Them not having too much, but having a big heart to share with people, especially strangers. Smallholder farmers, they respect people who go to them, especially for the purpose of helping them. It has been quite a ride. Like I said, it's a thrilling one and challenging one as well. Working with more other farmers for over 5 years have made me to realize so much potential these farmers possess. With the right infrastructure, right knowledge, right technology, smallholder farmers could do a lot more. They are the solution to our food crisis. They are the solution to our food insecurity, because they produce, them alone produces up to 70% or more than that of what we consume. There is a lot of challenges with regard to rural farming, lack of sufficient infrastructure, lack of access to roads, lack of access to affordable finance, lack of access to policy agriculture inputs. These are some of the challenges Nigerian smallholder farmers, or smallholder farmers in sub-Saharan Africa faces in general. That is why we remain committed to supporting these smallholder farmers with the little we have, through market linkages, access to affordable finance, access to quality inputs. That's why Southern Green Limited, as a company, we partner with a number of input suppliers, a number of input providers, we set up rural outlet for some of the needed agricultural input, just for the purpose of smallholder farmers getting access to this input. So, honestly speaking, a lot needs to still be done. We are still not close to where we want to be in terms of reducing the life of the smallholder farmers in terms of enhancing their livelihood. Therefore, I call on all relevant stakeholders for us to all put our hands on deck in ensuring we continue to support smallholder farmers, especially with needed infrastructure, such as access to roads, such as good hospitals, such as schools, so that they could send their children to school and get good education.
Thank you very much for sharing that. I mean, smallholder farmers are major contributors to the Nigerian economy, really. And we all have to come together. Agriculture is teamwork, and for us to achieve all that we plan to, we need to come together as a team. So I really commend you for what you're doing, because that's a whole lot. That's a whole lot for you and your team. So I think we could also work on something together, because our values sort of align. So maybe after this podcast, we can talk on something now to collaborate to achieve this. I mean, agriculture is all about collaborating. We have to work as a team, because it is huge enough and we can't really do all of it by ourselves. But then again, I want to still say thank you for what you're doing in your own little way. That's commendable. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And for also sharing your experiences with us, that we really do appreciate it. So guys, we want to answer the question how we can achieve food security even in the midst of conflict. We can say that conflict is a serious clash between individuals, mainly because of their differences in thought process and attitude, in understanding, in perception and interest. Now, Nigeria has seen so many security challenges, which is affecting the growth of the country. One of which is a major conflict is the farmers and herdsmen, where the crops are being destroyed by cows of the herdsmen and causing so much pain to the farmers. So what can you really say about that? I mean, I know that for sure that smallholder farmers are facing these challenges in the northern part of the world. So what can you say about the food security, food insecurity situation in the northeastern part of Nigeria?
Thank you, Sharon. This is something that is very dear to my heart. It's very unfortunate that we found ourselves in this situation. Smallholder farmers are facing serious security challenges, which is inevitably going to affect food supply in Nigeria and other West African countries, because Nigeria remains source of food for, you know, some African countries. We are facing security challenges ranging from banditry and kidnapping in the western part of the country. Herdsmen, farmer herdsmen crisis, mostly in the north central and the southwestern part of the country. And the ever long insurgency, which has forced a lot of smallholder farmers to run away from their farms. For instance, with the recent happenings in the northwestern part of the country, where bandits take over certain territories, putting levies on farmers, chasing farmers out of the farm, or even going to the extent of killing the farmers or kidnapping them while they went to provide us with what to eat. This is going to inevitably affect food supply, which will result in food insecurity in the country. We are facing global food inflation all over the world. There is food inflation due to some certain factors. Among them is the recent Russia-Ukraine crisis, which has made the prices of gas and energy to spike. For instance, Kaduna State is the largest producer of maize in Nigeria. Maize being the largest raw material for the production of animal food, both poultry feed and ruminant animal feed. Right now, bandits are terrorizing more than 40% of Kaduna, in terms of more than 40% of the landmass for Kaduna State, which is majorly the maize producing areas. This will significantly make rice production to drop. Maize production to drop, which will create a heightened competition for raw material for the meal feed we have in Nigeria, which will make prices of animal feed to skyrocket. which will inevitably affect the prices of the food we consume. Right now, a keg of egg that used to be, say, like 700, 750, 800 is now 2,200. In some places, 2,500.
Yeah, that's true.
More than double. Why? Because of high cost of meat, as well as coupled with high cost of gas and energy. So, also, Zamfara is a major producer for sorghum, which is also being used in animal feed, feed meals. Likewise, millet, which is a major source of carbohydrate for rural communities. Zamfara seeds, at the moment, more than 60% of Zamfara seeds is being under bandit siege. Bandits have taken over almost, not taking over Basile, but terrorizing more than 70% of Zamfara seeds, with farmers being chased away from their homes or putting a levy, a heavy levy that they cannot afford, telling farmers to pay a levy of 1 million before they can farm on his 2 hectare, 3 hectare is outrageous. It's unreal.
Very outrageous.
Some of these farmers have not even, have not in their entire life at a single time on up to that amount. 1 million naira. Some of these farmers are cultivating under 0.5 hectare, 1 hectare, 2 hectare, at most 5 hectare. In rural setting, whoever owns 5 hectare is no longer a smallholder farmer. Whoever owns up to 5 hectares in rural communities, that person will surely be considered as one of the elite in that community. So telling someone who is cultivating millet, sorghum, cowpea on a total of not more than 2 hectares to pay 1 million naira levy just so that he can go and farm is unrealistic and outrageous.
Very outrageous.
So,
I wonder.
The issue of food insecurity in Nigeria for now, I would say, is something of a setting. We are not happy seeing it, but Nigeria will surely face crisis of food insecurity in the coming months. We are also hopeful and optimistic that we are not still in it. Something can be done as well. I will use this opportunity to commend the Central Bank of Nigeria for its Anchor Borrowers program, which has increased food production in Nigeria. But that is not enough. We need private sector to key in and establish outgrower schemes in different locations for different commodities. That will help smallholder farmers with access to affordable finance. That will help smallholder farmers with access to quality input. That will help smallholder farmers with, market linkage. And that will significantly enhance the livelihood of smallholder farmers, as well as promote food production in Nigeria.
Thank you very much for sharing that. I just can't even begin to imagine how these farmers are feeling at this point. Even down here, we are also experiencing the hike of food prices already. So I wonder how it's going to be like in the next coming months. But I hope it doesn't get to that point, because when you look at it, the people that suffers the most, I don't even know what to say. because I during the pandemic we were able to see that so many households could not even afford even a 2 square meal anymore because of the pandemic. Not to talk of when the whole food prices gets up again for a longer period. I don't know how smallholder farmers would be able to manage. I don't even know how some households would also cope. I really hope there's something that will be done about this. I really hope and really have to act very fast, very fast. I keep wondering where these people come from, really, because I don't think it is something. Let me ask the question, really, because trust me, I don't even understand. Is it people from our side that are acting as bandits and causing all of this harm to the farmers, or are they coming from a different place entirely? Because I don't know where all of this is coming from. Maybe if you have an idea, you can share with me, because trust me, I don't really know.
Well, the issue of banditry, even though I'm not a security expert, I would say is a multidimensional. We have indigenous Fulanis that are terrorizing people due to lack of proper knowledge. That is why Edia had mentioned that there is need for government to provide schools for rural communities so that they can send their children to the school and so that their children have good education. So we have indigenous plans quite all right terrorizing us in the northwest, especially in the areas of Zamfara, Sokoto. Yes, we have indigenous plans. But it doesn't stop there. There are incidences. There was a study that was conducted by the Kaduna State Government in 2017-18, because of frequent crisis, farmer illness crisis in some part of Kaduna State. I recall the Kaduna State Government instituted a panel of inquiry, and that panel of inquiry did almost a 6 month research or assessment on the roots and causes of this labor farmer crisis. And part of what they come out with as part of their results or submission was that there were a group of nomads, Fulani nomads, that came in or that passes through Kaduna State and other north central part of Nigeria. Those nomads came from countries like Togo, passed through Niger, moved to Cameroon as well. And it has been established that those plans, when they are moving through some of these our states, they tend to terrorize our people. So that has already been established, like I said, by the panel of inquiry for the Ministry of Government instituted in 2018 or 1885. But me, on the other hand, I have experienced firsthand going to rural communities. I have seen firsthand some of these plans, and from my own assessment, I can confidently say those plans are not indigenous plans, are not Nigerian origin. They don't speak our language. They don't understand Hausa, which is a predominant language in the northern part of Nigeria. Even the dialect, their own dialect, is different from the normal dialect. I mean, from the normal plans we go around. I have seen, like I said, personally, you know, those plans carry heavy arms. At the time, of course, it was not gun, but it was sophisticated arms, matches, and the rest. And I have experienced firsthand invasion in one of our farms by then. There was a time, you know, during dry season when you would allow Fulani to settle on your farms to feed on the, you know, the leftover, that is considered to be a symbiosis relationship whereby the animals, the cattle, would feed on your leftovers on the farm while they would, you know, help add organic manure onto your farm line. So we allowed that, and when it was time for us to start preparing our farm lines, those Fulanis outrightly told us that they would not leave the farms. We allowed them for free to come and settle on our farm lines to feed their cows with our leftovers. And when it was time for us to prepare our land for the next season, they outrightly told us that they are not leaving. And they've been, you know, treating to, you know, inflict harm on us. Like I said, those Fulanis are absolutely not indigenous Fulanis. But that doesn't take out the fact that we also have indigenous plants. For instance, the popularly known Delo Chonji, who has been, unmerciful leader of one of the biggest bandit groups in Sokoto and Zamfara, is an indigenous of Sokoto. He's an indigenous of Sokoto. So, like I said, it is multidimensional. And of course, we cannot take out the fact that some other interested parties have taken advantage of that and are fueling the crisis due to one or the other, maybe one or two benefit they are getting from.
So now, considering this other this Fulani that is from Sokoto and is still disturbing his own people, what can we make out of that? Because for conflict to arise, there must be it relates to how you think, how you perceive things, your interests. So I do think that all of this plays a very crucial role. I think that if the government can get involved, that's where the whole infrastructure comes into play. Because I feel that if you're educated to a point, you would know that some of these things are not right. But I don't think that there is a clear understanding of some certain things. I don't know if you agree with that, but I feel that this all boils down to the perception, the way they think as well. So I'm talking about our own people now. I'm not talking about those that are coming from the different parts of the world or something. Now, because I mean, just imagine your own people attacking you. So you need to settle down to understand. Like you said, this is something that the government has done the research on since 2016, 13 or thereabouts. So, I mean, they should have been able to find out the way forward, because as it is, it keeps increasing. So you already know that most of the cost of all of this is from your own people. Now, have you tried to sort out the one happening from your end? I don't think that has been done. What I think is happening from our side is because our own people are probably not understanding. Their perception is quite different. Their understanding is different. Their interest, the way they process things are quite different. So somehow I think that is why it is affecting. So I don't know. So what do you think about that? I mean, we should start from our home, dealing with it from our side before moving to the other. Because if we have people from our side that are terrorizing us, they are most likely to team up with people coming from the other side. Don't you think so?
Absolutely, that is possible, and I think that has taken effect already. If you look at how these bandits are getting access to refunds, you will jump into that conclusion that something like this has already taken effect. But I would agree with you when you mentioned that all these things are happening as a result of their own psychology, as a result of how they think and how they perceive things. Well, I agree with you 100%, and this, will refresh my point once again on the need for government to provide the needed infrastructure in rural communities, especially in schools and hospitals. Like I said, I would want to repeat it. I am not a security expert. I might be wrong in my solution or assumption or analysis, but I think, based on the information I have, this has all started with cattle rustling. This has all started with cattle rustling. One group of Fulani, rustles cattle from another group, they kill themselves and eventually they started to transition into taking people, kidnapping people and holding them hostage, demanding ransom on them, which they realized to be a lucrative venture. I mentioned earlier that most of smallholder or rural communities or rural farmers doesn't cultivate more than 5 acres of land. That is why even according to CBN classification, what they mean by smallholder farmers is someone owning between 1 to 5 acres. Any person that owns more than 5 acres is no longer considered to be smallholder farmers. A research by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations categorizes, or rather assess, household holding of farmlands in rural communities, and they came up with 0.5 to be the average householding power, land holding per household is between 0.5 to 1.2 hectares. If you talk about 1.2 hectares or 2 hectares or 3 hectares, talking about major grains such as rice, maize, sorghum, millet, legumes such as cowpeas, soybeans, and the rest. You don't need more than, I mean, not you don't need, but let's say these farmers couldn't afford to invest up to more than 300,000 for their whole farms. So meaning that their, you know, GDP per se is not up to, per household is not up to 1 million. Their total GDP is not up to 1 million. And just like that, just by kidnapping someone, they will be given 10 million, 15 million. It must change their psychology. It must change their psychology. And it must drive them to stick on doing that. That is why I agree 100% with the governor of Kaduna State to verify that there is no repentant bandit. For me, there is no repentant bandit. Someone who doesn't have 500,000 of his own, then realizing a business that can bring him 5 million, 10 million at a go, and then that person will cool, you know, repent and stop that business just like that. No,
of course,
he has been given a better thing to do. So, government or relevant stakeholders, traditional leaders, spiritual leaders need to work hand in hand in one. Ensuring to change all the Orient mindset of this bandit. Not the current bandit, but the other, you know, vulnerable people that may came to, join what they see their fellow colleagues are doing. Also, talking about smallholder farmers, governments at different levels, federal government, state government, as well as local governments, need to develop a strategy in providing a soft landing for these farmers that are being displaced by farmers. One, to cushion the effect, the circumstances they find themselves, and two, to enable them produce what we need.
That
would
be great.
Urban people doesn't produce, produces insignificant quantity of food compared to what rural communities or smallholder farmers are producing. So if we fail to develop a strategy of taking in these smallholder farmers that have been affected by various conflict and insecurity, so that they can be able to still cultivate and produce food for us, we're going to be in trouble. Like I said, even in Zamfara or Katsina, who has been the epicenter of this pandemic, there are still other places that are not yet been affected. And there are terrible land in such areas. So government should start to think of how to develop those undeveloped land, and how to assign farmers on those lands in order to ensure continuous production. Other measures government should pay attention to, not just government and other focus is in the areas of application, as well as outgrowers, as I have already mentioned earlier. Under outgrowers, we can co-opt a significant number of farmers who could mostly be part of the displaced farmers by Bandifi and other spirits in challenges, provide them with the necessary items, provide them with land, provide them with agricultural inputs, and provide them with the necessary items for them to do what they do best, which is farming.
Yes, I agree with you. I think I came across your post on LinkedIn concerning the Plant for Peace founder coming to Nigeria to work with farmers. Can you tell me, just tell us about the event, when it's taking place. I'm sure so many persons want to hear what agricultural stakeholders have to say about what is happening in Nigeria, how we can improve the security, food security conflict in Nigeria as well. So just give us a short description of what is going down during this month of April. I think it's April. Yeah, April.
Yes. So just, yes. Well, thank you so much, Aaron, for bringing this. I mean, this is something myself and my partners are looking forward to. We are very much excited, we have been planning this for over 3 months now. Like you said, the event is already around the corner. The conference is holding on the 7th of April, which is Thursday, in 3 days from now. And I'm happy to have been part of the people organizing this conference, because this is one step in providing sustainable solutions to some of the security challenges affecting the farmers. The theme of the conference is advancing Nigeria's agriculture in the midst of conflict. And I'm very happy to say that we have invited one of the world-renowned conflict resolution specialists, especially as it relates to agriculture, by the name James Brett, who is equally the founder of an organization, an international organization, by the name Plant for Peace, which is being recognized all over the world as a result of activities in supporting smaller farmers in conflict affected areas. Plant for Peace has been actively supporting farmers in countries like Afghanistan, in countries like Syria, and other and other countries facing insecurity. This is the first time the founder is coming to Nigeria, and I'm happy to say that we have made adequate provision for him to meet with local stakeholders in Nigeria with the aim of reviewing, analyzing, and assessing the conflict, conflict and insecurity challenges facing the country.
That's good to know.
Yeah, as it affects agriculture as well as food security. So the conference is going to have the Vice President of Nigeria, His Excellency Professor Yemi Osunbajo, GCON, as a special guest of honor. While James Brett, who is equally the founder of Plant for Peace, will be the keynote speaker. We have invited state governors of some selected states, especially conflict affected states, such as Kaduna State, which has now become the epicenter of banditry and kidnappings, as well as Borno State, who have experienced security challenges for over a decade now, insurgency and all that, so that we can all come and share our own perspective with view to identifying, providing, and implementing sustainable solutions to addressing this. We are inviting all relevant stakeholders, we are inviting agropreneurs, we are inviting farmers, we are inviting policy makers, we are inviting everybody to come and join us as we discuss how to advance and use agriculture in the need of security. This is a big opportunity for Nigeria, having get someone like Jansubet, who is well experienced in addressing security challenges in the areas of conflict resolution, supporting smallholder farmers affected by conflict and insecurity, with the track record Plan for Peace has in transitioning farmers affected by conflict and insecurity to become employers of labor, to become food producers. I am very happy for Nigeria, and I hope this conference will be the first step towards that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing that. We really appreciate you, and very, very happy with what James Brett is coming to do in Nigeria. And of course, we look forward to seeing the event happening, and of course, changes. Thank you very much once again. So guys, we've come to the end of this podcast episode. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you listen. And if you have comments, please kindly drop your comments. And if you have questions, your questions as well. And hopefully I give you an answer to that. Thank you very much, guys. I love you. And thank you very much, our guests, for joining the show.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure, you're welcome. Do have a lovely time, guys. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.